This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long in studio. I want to tell everybody in just a few moments, we have on with us Renee Nado, who covers the Saints, also the scene sports-wise here in New Orleans for Crescent City Sports. Around 4:30, 4:35, three-time World Series champion pitcher Curt Schilling will join us here, talking about Major League Baseball, his career, and one of the biggest fans of the World War II Museum here in New Orleans. He just visited for Super Bowl week, and so we'll have Curt talk about everything baseball and a little bit about the city of New Orleans and the World War II Museum at 5:20. Jake Madison covers the NBA and Locked On Pelicans will join us and talk about the Pelicans as they resume play tomorrow night. And so we'll see what happens with the Pelicans pre-All-Star break. Not too good. Let's see if maybe you can get something rolling post-All-Star, or you wouldn't want to say it. I don't know what kind of game that was, Charlie. I don't know if you cared for it or
no
not.
No bueno.
But, it wasn't very good. On our Oakwood Hard Jewelers talking text line from Crescent City Sports, Renee Nado. Renee, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. Renee, it's been twice in the same week I get to see you. We were at the voting for the Saints Hall of Fame, and then now I get to talk to you on the air. So great to hear your voice again.
Hey, Michael, how you doing? Hey, Charlie, how you doing? It's always good to be with you, Mike. Yeah, we broke bread the other day and got a chance to visit. And always good to be with you, buddy.
Ask you about the staff with Kellen Moore now. And you got now three guys that have been former quarterbacks when you throw in Kellen Moore. And today made official with Doug Nussmeier. And, you know, and to me, the offensive staff sort of broke kind of how you thought it might. Other than I didn't realize the Nugent part would come into play offensive line. But other than that, it seemed to be kind of fall into place. Now, I think the big question mark of how that defensive staff looks. But because I think, you know, this staff got some really sharp offensive minds. Now, you need players. Ain't no question about that. But the defensive staff is the big question mark for me.
Yeah, Mike, and I think the name that keeps coming up to me and both you guys, I'm sure, is Brandon Staley, who worked with Kellen with the Chargers, and he was a head coach there. He also was defensive coordinator for the Rams. And some names tossed around, a guy that is well-known locally, Eric Henderson, who played at Ender Carr and was with the Rams as defensive line coach and now with USC. Yep. Eric Henderson is one of the most respected defensive line coaches around. And another name is Derek Ansley, who was with the Chargers, now with the Packers. He's tied to Brandon Staley as well. And Jay Rogers, who may coach the linebackers, is a possibility, was also with the Chargers, the Falcons, and the Bears. So, you know, you got to think, guys, that if Staley does get it, which it looks like he could, you know, those guys are all tied together, and Kellen is also has a relationship with those guys. So, and going in as a first-time head coach, he's going to need a lot of support guys he's familiar with and guys he's on step with.
Renee, you and I have done this a long time, and all coaches tell you the same. Yeah, I might be a pretty good coach, but I'm a lot smarter when I got better talent. And this football team, you were talking about this Tuesday. Man, virtually across the board, there isn't a spot that you either don't need a starter or a quality backup guy. And this isn't going to happen overnight. This isn't going to be a repeat of 2006 in what Sean Payton was able to do with 29 new players on the roster. And that team went to the NFC Championship game. That's still, and I've told Coach Payton this before, best coaching job he ever did was 06. It wasn't 09. It was 06 to take that team and to get them that close. This is not a slight rebuild. This is a major retooling of this roster.
Yeah, and you got to knock it down to the foundation. And you know, going back, Mike, as you alluded to, Sean Payton didn't have to deal with the salary cap disability that they have right now. And, you know, Kellen Moore's coming aboard, and he's going to have to get rid of some guys and put his people in place, but that's not going to be easy because that salary cap is going to restrict you on what you can do and who you can bring in. You know, this is going to be a vital draft, as you know, both of you guys know, and free agency. How much free agency will the salary cap allow you? And, you know, names are being tossed around, but these guys don't come cheap, and you want some high-quality talent in the NFL. You know, it's going to cost you a little money. So I agree with you. Exactly, Mike. It's going to be a year or so before he can really get in step and get to where he wants to be. And, you know, and that's why I think he's going to bring people around him, like the Brandon Staley's, like the Doug Nussmeier's, you know, that he's been in step with before, been in that room before, and he kind of knows how they think, they know how he thinks.
The salary cap adjustment, we saw it yesterday, and that'll help a little bit. When it's finally finalized next week sometime, that's not going to cure all your ills that you have financially in the salary cap situation. It does help anytime they kind of cut some of that down a little bit and you get a little extra money taken off of the top, which you're going to need to take still quite a bit off. But I think you're going to have to build this through the draft. And, you know, you and I kind of had a brief conversation about this. When you pick ninth, what you want is a guy that's going to come in and be an impact player year one. Because you can basically say any position. If it's defensive line, if it's cornerback, if it's wide receiver, tight end, offensive line, you name it, they could use help there. You brought up the name to me, Will Johnson, the cornerback from University of Michigan, and if he was still there at nine, and I think you had a projection, and Charlie and I will do one for next Monday, and we'll preview it next week, our mock. But your thoughts on Will Johnson, and he got hurt about midseason, and so it was almost sort of, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Man, Will Johnson's one hell of a player. At that cover cornerback position, and he's a big corner. He's not a small guy, and we saw how good that Michigan defense was in 2023.
And Mike, you and I have done this for almost half a century, and you've been much better than I. But you're right, Will Johnson. When we were talking at lunch the other day, Will Johnson, 6'2", 202, runs a 4.4 40, and his dimensions, maybe not his skill set, but his dimensions are very, very similar to Patrick Surtain, who was the defensive player of the year in the NFL this year. You know, Will Johnson surrendered 3 touchdown passes. His Pro Football Focus coverage grade was 82.2. In 32 games with the Wolverines, 9 interceptions, 10 passes broken up, and he was targeted 108 times and drew a 49.5 Pro Football Focus grade. And you got to remember, too, as you both know, Will Johnson did not a lot of teams stayed away from him, so he wasn't targeted a lot. But when he was targeted, he stepped up and made a big play. And like you said, that number 9 pick is going to be vital this year. Everywhere, I think, would be an option except quarterback. I just can't see the Saints picking a quarterback at number 9. But
I don't
you know,
see it either. I agree with you.
Yeah, and cornerback edge and, you know, a lot of spots. But, Mike, I tell you what, Will Johnson, and I could be wrong about this, but he's a guy that if he falls, as you said a second ago, only playing 6 games this year, will that allow him to drop a spot or two and have the Saints sitting there at 9 waiting to see if he falls? And he's got to be one of the top two or three players they have on their board right now. That's what I would think. And Will Johnson, and you're losing, with Marshawn Lattimore gone, Paulson Adebo, what's going to happen there? You really need somebody to step in there, you know, with Alante Taylor and Kool-Aid coming back. Will Johnson would be a really ideal fit for that defense.
Renee, hopping back to Doug Nussmeier real quick before we let you run, I wanted to ask you about the comfort level with Kellen Moore, because they started out basically every year that Kellen Moore has been an OC, Doug Nussmeier has been on his staff. And they started out actually as kind of co-workers when in 2018, before he was the OC of the Cowboys, he was the QB's coach, Kellen Moore was. And then, you know, Nussmeier at that time was the tight ends coach. But then Kellen Moore gets promoted to OC from 2019 through 2022 of the Cowboys. Nussmeier is his quarterback's coach. He moves with him to L.A. as the Chargers QB coach when Kellen Moore becomes the OC of the Chargers. And then he was on Kellen Moore's staff in Philadelphia in 2024. It just feels like there's a certain comfort level here between these two guys, and it just made all the sense in the world for him to follow him to New Orleans.
Yeah, Charles, that's a good question. And, you know, people remember Nussmeier back with the Saints when he was on in the quarterback room with Everett and Heath Shula and Danny Werfel and Billy Joe Hobert. But Doug has done a great job in coaching. He's coached at Michigan. He's coached at Alabama with Nick Saban. He's won a national championship at Idaho, a Super Bowl championship, a Grey Cup championship, and a national championship with Alabama. So he's won it at every level, and he's got a very good mind. And as we talked about being in lockstep together, Doug Nussmeier and Kellen Moore know each other very, very well, and there's a trust factor there. And I think Doug and Kellen in a game plan, even though Kellen Moore has talked about calling the plays, there's a trust factor, and they both think along the same lines, and that's vital. And that's, you know, I mean, Kellen Moore is a guy who's being perceived as a mild-mannered kind of guy, highly respected due to his intelligence, but he's going to have to gain the confidence of that locker room. And this is a new group of guys. He had the confidence of the Eagles, Charlie, but the thing is, when he steps into a new locker room with the Saints, they're going to be watching him closely, and he's going to have to really gain that confidence and that trust.
Scott Tolzien, another former quarterback, comes in as the quarterback coach. And he's got a job on his hands because, you know, you think about it, Derek Carr is not the future of this franchise. I think they'll give Rattler certainly every opportunity with training camp. And I guess now to work with your two starting receivers. I mean, because they were lost. A lot of times people kind of throw that out. Look who he was throwing to when he was in the games. And so I think, though, Renee, they're going to have to still go out and get a bridge guy. Even a veteran guy that can come in here to get you to 2026.
Well, you know, and I tell you, would have been a great guy for that. And I mean, I might be the only one thinks this, but Andy Dalton would have been a great guy, you know. But and I can't think that, you know, Spencer Rattler, is he going to be the future? We don't know that. What's Derek Carr's future beyond 2025? But you're right. You got to surround those quarterbacks with talent, and Olave was not available through a lot of the season, and Raheed was injured as well. So you need to bring in a big-time receiver. Will that be through a free agency move or through the draft? I think the draft will address that, but I agree with you. And this roster is going to be upgraded, and that's going to be a tall task to get up to the playing for the conference division crown, at least, because there's some guys on the roster right now. There's going to have to be some moves and decisions made.
Get better up front, offensive, defensive line,
yep.
Big man guys that can help you win, and also maybe a big man receiver. So, Renee, that's just the way I look at it. If you don't get better up front, you stuck in neutral, so to speak.
And I got to think, Mike and Charlie, that they're going to address the offensive line in the first three or four rounds. And I can see them taking a offensive lineman in round two and maybe a defensive lineman in round three. But that's a high priority for 2025.
Renee, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate all your insights, bud, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Renee.
I hope so, guys. Y'all have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. Renee Nato, who covers the not only the Saints, but the prep scene, college football world for Crescent City Sports. We'll take a break, come back, and remember at 4:30, around that time frame, we'll have on with us former Major League Baseball pitcher Curt Schilling right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long in studio. And Charlie, this is breaking just a few minutes ago, but the NFL Network is reporting that 9-time All-Pro offensive guard Zach Martin is retiring from the National Football League. Man, Zach came out in 2014. He had played left tackle for Notre Dame, and a lot of people were, I'm not drafting nobody from Notre Dame. They never pan out in the NFL. It panned out for the Cowboys. That was a Stephen Jones pick. That was not a Jerry pick. Jerry talked about Johnny Manziel, and Ryan Deshear was also there. But it was basically Stephen Jones banging the table. Let's pick Zach Martin. And he turned out to be a fantastic football player for the Cowboys. Again, 11 seasons in the NFL, 9-time All-Pro. Man, that guy was a stud up front. But you could see over the last couple of years, injuries had started. He wasn't quite the same player. He was still really good, but wasn't quite the guy that came into this league. And you talk about a stellar player from day one, it was Zach Martin.
Future Hall of Famer.
No question.
I mean, undoubtedly so. Not just a 9-time All-Pro, Mike. You know, Bobby always talks about, like, if you're the best at your position, first-team All-Pro. 7-time first-team All-Pro at guard. Zach Martin was one of the best to do it on the offensive line in the past decade. He made, like, the 2010s All-Decade team as well. But you kind of heard the buzz that he was going to hang it up pretty soon. As you mentioned, kind of injuries started piling up. He's 34 years old. He probably could keep playing if he wanted to.
And he's made a few coins along
exactly.
the way.
But that's his decision. And I mean, he leaves behind a legendary Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, he really was a great player in this league. And I don't use that a lot, but he really was. He was a dominating guard in the National Football League. And again, after 11 seasons, Zach Martin walks away from the National Football League. When we come back, it'll be 3-time World Series champion Curt Schilling joining us here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long in studio. We're going to go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. One of the greats, we've watched him play basically 20 years in the major leagues as a pitcher, 3-time World Series champion, 6-time All-Star. Twice he led the National League in strikeouts, Curt Schilling. Curt, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
What's up, guys?
All right, Curt. Curt, we missed you on Media Row. You were here for Super Bowl week. And my daughter missed you. She works at the World War II Museum. And you are a big fan of the World War II Museum. And she was telling me that at one time, I think you served on the board for the World War II Museum.
I did. So this is the 25-year anniversary, June 6th this year. I was on the original board of directors. A lot of my World War II collection resides in the museum itself, and I had a chance to hang out down there while I was down in New Orleans, and I'm just blown away by what it's become. And, you know, last year I was actually in the Netherlands for the 80th anniversary of the Battle of Arnhem. We had a chance to see cemeteries and museums all over Europe. And I would tell you that from I'm a World War II history guy, the museum is probably one of the, it's a bucket list item for people. There's some amazing, amazing experiences to be had in there.
I remember when Stephen Ambrose came up with that idea, and Steve, you know, he passed away and didn't get to see all this, but he would be so thrilled to see that museum as a must-see item here in New Orleans.
Agreed. And, you know, one of the things I hope that during the week of the Super Bowl that the museum got swarmed just because of everything that's happened down in that town and that beautiful city since the disasters. I want to see New Orleans get back on its feet again, and that's certainly going to be a centerpiece to that happening.
Curt, I always talk about this, I guess as I get older, when you think about sustained success and playing big in the biggest moments, it doesn't matter if you're in the law, you know, in the lawyer business, or you're a doctor, or you're an engineer, agreed, whatever, or in the sports business, it's all about sustained excellence. You have done that. At the highest level, you know, you think about what you've been able to accomplish and being a 3-time World Series champion. I don't know where we lost this about not recognizing people with sustained excellence in life at any level. And
I certainly appreciate that. I mean, that's very kind of you to say.
But I think we've sort of lost that for whatever reason in our lives. We lose it. And what gave you that drive? Because not a lot of guys can pitch right. that long.
We lost it because of the world we live in. The world we live in is all about immediate returns, is all about immediate gratification. And we, you know, I think about this. I say this being a Pittsburgh Steeler fan. I spent years in New England, in the New England area in Boston. And in 1999, nobody on the planet cared about the New England Patriots. 20 years later, it's one of the most hated franchises in existence, and the only reason it is because they won.
Yeah,
we have such an affinity for the odd take in the sense that we love underdogs and we hate when the underdogs become the favorites. Like, we're rooting for them to win, and then when they win, we're like, okay, that's enough. And you know, we don't like sustained success. And it's harder and harder to do these days, I think, for just because of the sheer athleticism of athletes these days is so different than it used to be. But, my motivation was personal. I would tell you the single most motivating factor in my life was an extreme fear of failure. And I came to find out that, for the most part, all great, anybody that was good at something, that was a very significant part of their makeup. And I hated failing so much, in my mind, that I would do whatever I have to do to make sure it never happened again, knowing full well it probably would. But I never lost that.
Kurt, I think about it, where you got to pitch. And, yeah, you know, when you that long a pitcher, you're going to kind of clip around a little bit. You got to pitch in Philly. And, man, when you went in there, man, you on top of the world.
Yeah.
Man, when things aren't good, you a bum. And it started the same thing in Boston. Two fan bases that are kind of linked in the chain when you think about baseball and their caring of baseball and also sports in general.
Well, I laugh since I retired at people in the real world, I'm using air quotes here, who come to me and will say things and like, oh, I don't mean to offend you. I'm like, dude, I played 15 years in Philly and Boston. You think you're going to offend me? I walked into Yankee Stadium in a Red Sox uniform. I heard things about my mother I never knew existed. You can't offend me. I've heard it all. And when you realize that it's never personal because the people saying the things they say don't know you, you grow a thick skin, and you have to. You know this as well. Yeah. You guys have to have a thick skin in sports to survive in a clubhouse because everything's on the table. You know, as far as sustained success goes. But you know, I think it's funny you mentioned sustained success because one of the things I'm paying attention to is college baseball season.
Yeah,
kicking off, and I would be comfortable putting $1,000 on the table and saying Texas A&M, LSU, Arkansas, Tennessee, or Florida, one of those will win the SEC. I mean, they are freaking loaded this year. Loaded. And Ben McDonald was one of my first teammates and roommates in professional baseball. And he's been a friend for him and Nikki and their family. And I caught Ben doing some stuff with the SEC. But I got to tell you, college baseball, and in particular, those organizations, those that I mentioned, they're turning into a true minor league franchise. And that's very different than when I grew up and when I got drafted. These guys are coming out of college much more polished than they have in the past, and the baseball has been unbelievable.
Yeah, no question about it since, you know my 60-something years on this earth. College baseball, I talked to Skip Bertman. Skip was like, Mike, I'm going to tell you, when I first came here, they maybe had a couple hundred people. And of those couple hundred people, that were no fans. It was either girlfriends or friends of the family or moms and dads come and watch them.
Yep.
That was none of this. And now it's packed to the gills from Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday at Alex Box. It is unbelievable the growth of college baseball in the South. Like, I've never seen anything before.
Right. I agree. And I, for all the evils of the internet and social media, I think that's one of the benefits. I think the exposure that college baseball has gotten, I mean, listen, I could go in all day about this conference, but you look at Texas A&M this year, like, I can't wait. I can't remember what the date is. There's an early season. Late in April, Texas plays Texas A&M. Texas stole Texas A&M's coaching staff. Like, that's going to be fun. Guys are going to be throwing at each other. Like, I can't wait. And you know, I what's this kid, Laviolette, with A&M? Yep. I mean, this kid's Aaron Judge, 6'6", a center fielder. At 6'6", come on. He's got, and you're looking at possibly the number one pick with Prager on the mound for them. You know, I mean, you got to feel good if you're an A&M fan. But again, when you look at the sustained excellence of an LSU, of a Tennessee, and it's the same, right? It's Arkansas, it's Florida, yeah. it's the warm weather states. You're seeing, in some cases, guys who are much closer to the big leagues and probably better than many minor league players on college baseball fields. And that's pretty cool.
2004, playing on that Red Sox team, okay, they hadn't won. That was the curse of the Bambino. They hadn't won the series since 1916. Being there in Boston at that time, and just to be in the middle of all of that swirl, because they had come so close a couple years right before then, and then to win it. For Red Sox fans, and I saw the HBO special on it, it was like, you know, so many of them, it's embedded in my mind. You know, I'll forget right a lot of other things, but them winning the World Series in 04 will always be there with me.
Right. Yeah, well, two things. First off, the curse was, and that made it easy for me in that sense. I didn't have that hanging over me. And ultimately, in the winter of 2003, when the trade went down, I had to. My wife wanted to be to go to New York, and she wanted me to play for the Yankees. And I knew in the back of my mind, through different conversations, that the Yankees were going to be at my home the day after negotiations with the Red Sox broke off if it didn't work out. And it ultimately came down to a conversation that we had, which was I could go, and you know, we talked about this. So I could go to New York. I could go to New York and I would be a part of winning their 26th, 27th, and 28th World Championship, or I could go to Boston and be a part of something no one alive had ever seen. And that was a far bigger attraction to me than anything. The allure of going somewhere and doing something nobody had ever seen before was way too enticing to pass up.
Charlie? Kurt, you had mentioned earlier Ben McDonald, your former teammate. The guy that broke all of his records in a single season was Paul Skeens. And, you know, he coached, right, comes from Air Force. He has a legendary 2023 campaign with LSU baseball. He becomes the first overall pick of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And just what you've seen from him early on in his career, wins the NL Rookie of the Year award, goes 11-3 with a 1.96 ERA and 170 strikeouts. One of the most electric players in all of baseball, and he's on the mound.
Kurt, the other thing, too, isn't that your parents' hometown, Pittsburgh?
My dad was born and raised in Somerset, right outside
okay
of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I grew up a Pirate fan.
Okay.
So, yep. No, I mentioned something on social media the other day about things I want to see this spring, and he was at number one on my list. I want to see what it looks like this spring because, you know, he's a thoroughbred and a true horse who they're holding back the reins on. My biggest fear is that he's a max effort guy. And I worry about that because I know how the human body's composed and created, and it's not built to do this at that level. And there's a reason why you don't see guys like him. First of all, they're few and far between to begin with, but it's just physically the pounding. I want to see his workload. You know, he was in the Cy Young conversation last year, legitimately, in my opinion, because I don't think people have ever seen anything like that. You know, the day and age of the, if you think about the way pitching has gone with, you know, dramatic number of injuries and the fact that you have openers and starters are coming out after the fifth and all the things. It used to be, you know, Nolan Ryan against, or Koufax against Gibson. You had that antagonist, the protagonist. You had the matchup every night. That's gone away in a lot of senses because you don't have, you know, oh, I'm going to go see DeGrom and Skeens go up against, well, I'm going to see him for five innings. And I think that's taken a lot away from the game. There are few guys who I would pay money to see, mainly because I'm retired, but he's one of them. I every night, it was like watching him last year was like pitching with Randy in Arizona. Every night he takes the ball, you might see something you've never seen in your life. And that, to me, is always the beauty of baseball, because every night you see highlights of guys doing things you've never seen before. And you know, when you get a pitcher like him, you almost want to put that glass case around them to ensure that, because he's good for baseball, ultimately. And he seems like a phenomenal guy. You know, much like Justin Verlander, I think it's unfair to be blessed with that much talent and have a girlfriend that's hot. But, you know, okay. To the rich go the spoils, I guess.
Kurt, we talk about rich goes the spoils. We've had a lot of people here talk about Major League Baseball. They don't like what's happening with the Dodgers, the way they've set up contracts and everything. And listen, part of that is jealousy. I get it. They're able to do it. But your thoughts on what's being pieced together in Los Angeles now? And boy, we talk about, you know, we do a lot of football talk in the Rams and the Chargers. Man, they on page 8 or 9. In the newspaper, man, it's Dodgers or Lakers.
Right.
That's it. That's what they care about in LA. Your thoughts on what's happening and what's being done with the Dodgers and a lot of this throwing money back for future contract.
Well, a couple things. First off, if I wasn't on the Dodgers roster, I would not want to be in the NL West. Secondly, as a player, God bless them. I love the fact the players are getting the money they're getting. But if you look back on the last, I think in the last 16 years, there have been 15 different world champions. The competitive balance in base, NFL owns competitive balance, right? I mean, the NFL, for the most part, almost every year, you could have a Super Bowl contender, I mean, that you don't see coming. That generally doesn't happen in baseball, because over 162 games, your awards show. You know, people want a salary cap. I absolutely refuse to believe that that's the answer. The fact of the matter is, baseball's turned into an $11 billion a year business in the big markets. You know, if you want to truly fix it, in a sense, the owners would share revenue. They would split the revenue across the board, and everybody would spend with the same pool. They're not going to do that.
No.
So short of that, what's the other solution? Ask the players to take less?
Mm-mm.
Right? I mean, capitalism is a beautiful thing, and we've seen that it fixes – capitalism kicks the crap out of government and oversight every time. But, you know, the team with the highest payroll doesn't win the World Series every year. Now, the higher your payroll, I think there is an argument to be made, the better your chances are playing in October. But, you know, and 04 was a great example. We, you know, the Red Sox-Yankees series, if you looked at the rosters, the Yankees had Hall of Famers all over that roster. Those things don't matter in October. The best teams win in October, and they always have. And, you know, I'll hold that to my dying breath. So, you know, the problem is, and I think it's a real conversation, you could split the roster in L.A. in two and have two competitive teams. And that kind of sucks for the rest of baseball, I think. But I don't think it's bad, because doesn't the world love to hate somebody?
Yes, I think you're right.
Right. And if you think about it, against all odds, the Dodgers are more disliked than the Yankees. How did that happen?
Kurt, we got to get you back in broadcasting full time. Man, listen, we've had a lot of people come on here and talk baseball, but you being able to maybe get to the point with it and your bluntness about things. Now, sometimes people don't like that. They don't like to be told the truth about stuff. They really don't. But, man, you got to get back full time doing this.
But I say it often in the sense that I know at my heart I'm a good person, so I'm not going to say things malicious or mean-spirited or anything. But people always say, oh, I love you because you tell it like it is. And I try to make sure they temper that with, no, I'm telling you what I think. That doesn't mean I'm right.
Right.
But if you don't want my opinion, don't ask me, because I'm not going to answer the question with a yes or no answer. I'm going to give you what I think and what I feel about things, and you might not like it, but if you don't want the opinion, don't ask.
Kurt, one last one before we let you run. I wanted to ask you about Alex Bregman going to your Red Sox. You know, I'm an Astros fan.
Oh,
Kurt.
he's an Astros fan.
I saw the writing
Kurt.
On the wall over the winter. I knew it was going to happen. Right. It was going to land somewhere, whether that be Chicago or Detroit. He ends up in Boston with that 3-year, $120 million contract. So, first and foremost, your thoughts on that. And then also the kind of comments that came out about Rafael Devers, that he wants to play third base. He's the third baseman here. And Bregman being a professional that
he
is.
I think a couple things. I think it's a great signing. I mean, Alex is a Hall of Famer in the making. I thought, given what happened after the signing, I thought that there was a huge mistake made by the Red Sox front office in not communicating with all parties involved. No way the Devers comments should have even been public. But what would have been the harm in reaching out to Rafael and say, hey, listen, you know, we're thinking about bringing in this superstar, and you know, we're not sure what we want to do positionally, getting his feedback right then, because I guarantee you if that conversation had happened, his comment would have never been made. And knowing Alex, I guarantee you Alex made sure that it was water under the bridge immediately, which he did. There was a report the other day that he spent almost 45 minutes working defensively with Rafael third base. Alex is a gold glover. Like, you know, and ultimately I think the solution will be Rafael will come out with whatever. I'll do whatever I need to do to make this team, to help this team win. You hope that's the result, because Alex is going to. Alex will play right center field if he has to help the team win. And if you're going to win, you have to have buy-in from everybody, and you certainly have to have buy-in from your best player. And you know, I was kind of surprised that an Alex Cora-led team had that happen, because I guarantee you Alex made sure that that was dead the day after it came out. But, you know, other than that, I think it's a great signing. Short contract for big dollars seems to be a smart thing to do, unless you can defer $600 million for 30 years. I think it's a great signing. He is, you know, Alex is one of those guys that always confounded sabermetrics people, because sabermetrics people always looked at it like, okay, here's the nine guys. This is our optimal roster. This is how many runs we're going to score. We can't lose. And they never win. And they could never put their thumb on that sixth tool, which was, this guy's a baseball player. And Alex Bregman has that sixth tool. Like, he has things. He helps the team, and I know people will poo-poo this, but I've seen it happen, and I know it for a fact. There are guys who help you win games when the games aren't being played. There are guys who, after that Sunday night baseball game at 3 in the morning when you're in customs in Toronto, everybody's miserable. There's the guy like Alex who says something that makes everybody laugh and makes it okay. That is something of value that you can't put a tangible value to. It bothers people who make decisions based on numbers. And Alex is definitely one of those guys.
Kurt, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Yep. Man, really enjoyed the conversation. Best of luck to you. And you do so many things away from the game. People, you know, with ALS and also autism awareness.
Thank
and
you.
What you brought out
yep.
about the World War II Museum. We really appreciate everything you do, just not as the former player, but also as the guy.
Thanks, Kurt.
Also, I appreciate that, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kurt. Appreciate it. Kurt Schilling, 3-time World Series champ. Charlie, that was awesome. Great interview with Kurt Schilling. Tell us a lot about Major League Baseball. We'll be back to finish it up here in hour number one of Sports Talk right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 at 520. Jake Madison will join us right after this news break.